You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday. It is November 21st, 2016. You're listening to episode 234.
Whoa!
234. It's almost the end of November. It's Thanksgiving this week. Do you have any Thanksgiving plans?
We're going to make food.
Oh, great.
Deep fry a turkey.
Hey, there you go.
And some Filipino food.
Yeah, because the glorious tradition of Filipino food at Thanksgiving continues.
Yes.
I think builders,
for my family it does.
Yeah. I'm frankly jealous.
It's good
for you. I think builders know by now that that you eat good every Thanksgiving.
We do.
Whereas I have nothing but headaches and frustration.
Yeah.
Every year.
Because we don't do the family thing anymore. It just was, we have four sets of parents and it's just really hard to know where to go and
sure.
to figure that out. And
sure.
if we invited everyone here, it's just nobody would fit. There's too many people. Mm-hmm. So we just
yeah
do our own thing with another family who has the same problem.
Yeah.
Not knowing where to go because there's right. too many places and too many people. And
that sounds so much better. So, yeah. And Christine yeah. and I tried for a couple of years to combine our two families at Thanksgiving and at Christmas to try and bring everybody together in our house. Hey, but no.
And then you realize that was stupid.
That was stupid. We should never have tried to do that because it just...
Unity, man. What's with that?
Just upset everybody.
It's basically, they've just released that new Starbucks cup recently. It was all about unity and a bunch yeah. of people got mad about
right.
it. So it's what happens.
So now we just sit quietly and wait for commands. Right. And then we do as we're told. And then we leave early.
Yep. Show up late and leave early.
There you go.
Good plan.
That's my plan. That's how I do.
Show up late and leave early. Our autobiography by Rob.
No, I'm a very punctual person. I value being on time. You know what I don't like, Jason?
Not being on time.
I don't like it when other people are disrespectful of my time.
Right. Yeah.
I really hate that.
I bet the builders can make a counter argument that we are disrespectful of their time.
What do you mean?
I'm kidding.
We stayed well within our hour time slot, sometimes sure. less, you know?
It's true. Sometimes we say, we don't have that much to say, guys. It's going to be a short episode sure. today.
And we post on a regular, reliable schedule.
We do. It's true.
And we don't overpromise and underdeliver. We are reliable, I think, in terms of podcasting. And I reliability, punctuality are things that are important to me.
You know, not wasting anyone's time. This reminded me, this is a tangent, but I'm going to go off on it.
Tangents are good.
That's what we do on this show.
Yeah.
Felicia Day, you're familiar with her, right?
I am.
I know you don't think she's as awesome as I do, but yeah. her Twitter account, I don't remember what the rest of her Twitter profile said, but when I first started following her, it said something, something, something. I like to keep my tweets real and not waste people's time. And all I kept thinking was, this girl has a fundamental misunderstanding of what Twitter is.
Yeah.
So yeah. anyways, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
there you go.
I thought that was dumb. Nathan Fillions, however, said uh-huh. something, something, and then it said, it takes nothing to just be kind to someone, to say something kind, even less to just shut up altogether. And that's good.
That's
right?
good too.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah.
Yes. There's, yeah. there's a talent to writing a good Twitter bio.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Mine's bad.
Factual, factual, factual. Ha, bazinga. And then you're done, right?
Yeah.
So
mine's just super boring.
Mine is credential, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
My mom says I tweet about beer too much, which is true and kind of funny.
You don't
but
tweet
I don't,
about
I don't
beer
tweet
much.
About beer anymore, though. I used to, yeah. right? So I might have to update that at some point.
Yeah.
I maybe make it say, I'd like to keep my tweets real and not waste anyone's time.
Sure. Or just say, I wish I should start tweeting more about beer.
Right.
Just make it that.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
A friend of mine, mm-hmm. Who I haven't talked to in a very long time, but she's somebody I met on Twitter. I think her Twitter bio was the funniest thing to me. And I don't know if it's actually that funny, but to me,
mm-hmm.
like
mm-hmm.
I laughed like out loud, actually multiple times when I read it, which mm-hmm. was hers just said snark incarnate mm. where carnate equals track pants. And I don't know why, but that just really, really like, I don't know, but like for some reason that made me laugh a lot, a lot, a lot.
Snark and track pants.
Yeah. So basically, like, you know, yeah. like, because it's a snarky way to say that you're snarky. And so,
yeah.
Anyways,
it's funny.
It just made me laugh. Right.
So I wouldn't say it's out, laugh out loud funny.
It was to me. So
I would say it's like, ah, funny.
I could see that.
Clever, funny.
Anyways. Yeah. So Twitter, I hope you wrote a good Twitter bio for yourself.
I'm
you.
Sure I didn't.
I'm talking about the builders.
Oh, builders.
I hope you have good Twitter bios.
Yeah, send us your Twitter bios.
If you feel like you have the best Twitter bio, yeah. tweet at us.
There's no prize, but we would love to read them on the show.
Yes, we would. So yeah. So yeah, and if it's the only thing I'm going to say is if it's bad, we're going to make fun of you.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at you, Matt Riddle. I don't know what yours is, but I guarantee it sucks.
Just call him out at every opportunity.
You know what it says? It says my head is like a shark's fin.
Yeah. Call back. My hat. No, it's hat.
You said head the entire time we recorded the show.
Hat.
You said head.
Nope, it's hat. My hat is like a shark's fin.
What if his head was like a shark's fin, though?
He would have cancer.
I don't know that.
Or a strange growth of some kind.
Mutant abilities?
Well, that's a comic book, Jason. We're talking about the real world and a real person with a head shaped like a shark's fin.
He would be very aerodynamic in the water.
He would, but he also, there wouldn't be much space in there for a brain.
Whoa.
I think he would be pretty impaired.
I think we figured out what's happening here.
LL Cool J?
No. Is what? That I just said that, you just basically said that Matt Riddle has a small brain. You heard it here first. Rob Couch says Matt Riddle has a small brain.
But his head is not shaped like a shark's fin. His hat, maybe.
Yeah.
He might have a hat like a shark's fin.
I hope he does.
I hope so, too.
I bet he doesn't, though.
I want him to dress up like a shark for Halloween next year.
Yep.
I want everyone to dress up like a shark for Halloween next year.
Yeah, that's great.
My head is like a shark's fin. It's fun. It's fun doing a podcast.
We're good, yeah. We're good at doing a podcast.
It's a thing that we do.
I was looking to see how long we'd had banter. Has it
been long enough? Have we checked that box?
I want to make sure we check the box of annoying anyone that might not like banter. Right. So.
How about a topic?
Oh, a topic! I love topics!
So
is this a good topic or is it going to suck?
I think this is going to be an okay topic.
Okay, well, we're going to find out.
Yeah.
I don't remember what it is. Something theme is what I remember.
Yeah, so we were talking yesterday trying to come up with themes. And I threw one out there kind of just sort of haphazardly. And I said, what makes a good theme or what makes a theme good for a game and what makes a theme bad for a game or that kind of idea. And I sent a tweet out earlier this evening to see if anybody had any comments on that subject. But before I get into builder responses from Twitter, what do you think? What makes a theme good or bad for games?
For me, I can sum it up really, really easy.
Okay, go.
Fun and quirky, good. Boring, bad.
Okay.
I need a fun and quirky theme, right?
Okay.
Like super serious themes, like, don't usually do it for me.
What about quilting? That's pretty boring.
But in the game Patchwork, it's quirky, mm-hmm. right? It's
it's presented quirky.
Right. And so here's the thing. When I think of boring, I think of Euros, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think of like standard traders in the 1300s.
Mm-hmm. You know,
that to me is boring. Now, those games are not always boring. Sometimes I very much enjoy those games, but the theme just doesn't do it for me.
Uh-huh.
And I like weird themes. Like I like, you know, like Potion Explosion, right? Mm-hmm. That got me excited when I heard Potion Explosion, mm-hmm. right? Sushi Go, like I'm looking at that right now, sitting back behind it. But like that is when I see Sushi Go, I think I want to play that game. A game I backed on Kickstarter recently, Go Nuts for Donuts. Like mm-hmm. It's a Sushi Go type game with donuts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sold.
Sure.
So
I was thinking of it in terms of what themes. Does a theme have room for variety in it? Is a theme open? Are there different ways to get into it, or are there things about the subject matter that are open for lots of different perspectives?
I literally don't know what you're talking about.
Well, so that traditional medieval setting Euro kind of idea, right?
Right.
There are 1,000 different perspectives on that basic concept of a medieval setting, okay?
I would argue there are dozens of different perspectives, and the other thousands are just the same perspectives over and over again.
Well, but think about it. I mean, there are things where you're building a castle, and there are things where you're trading with other merchants. There are things when you are negotiating political rivalries between nobles. So many different approaches have been made and perspectives on that basic setting is right. Probably why it's such a common theme. It's very broad. It's very open. It's very accessible. Zombies also. I mean, zombies, thankfully, the popularity of zombies as a theme has started to diminish in the last couple of years.
They rot.
But there are a lot of stories that could be told in the context of a zombie apocalypse. Now, I would argue that they've all been told now.
Well, so but here's what I think happened with the zombie games, okay. Right? I think Dead of Winter was a really good change for that because it was so big and so successful. It still is.
Yeah.
So market saturated, right?
Yeah,
you reach peak zombie at that point, right? That game became so popular. And then they came out with The Long Night, right?
Yeah.
Which is cool because now it's more of the same thing that was super popular that everyone loved.
Yeah.
But I think it's
in a way it killed the genre.
Yeah, but in a good way.
In a good way, right.
It's the opposite of Cards Against Humanity built a genre, right? But it built a genre because there was nothing there.
Sure.
Zombies was there. It was done. And then you basically got zombie perfection and people were like, well, screw it. I guess I'll just stop now.
Yeah. I can't top that.
Right.
Yeah.
And even if I could, no one's going to care because that game has so oversaturated the market.
Sure.
And I mean that in a good way.
Absolutely.
Right.
That's
great. But I think that probably is why. Whereas with the medieval theme or a Western theme, right?
Sure, sure.
Those are so just in our blood, right?
Mm-hmm.
As gamers, as people in general, right?
As people who are aware of popular culture.
Right.
Sure.
Because of that, we're never in danger of somebody making a Western game that's so good that Western games won't be excited. Saloon Tycoon was great, but, right? I mean...
No.
Like, with zombies, I mean, really, unless you're making something crazy quirky where it's like, you worked on that zombie races game for a while, mm-hmm. right? Like, that game could still exist now. Like, that game could still do okay because it's a familiar theme, but it's really different. It's a very different perspective. But the standard perspective is... You are surviving, right?
Sure.
I mean, you have games like Zombicide where it's a lot more tactical. Mm-hmm, there was another game that did very, very well because it was different and it was very tactical, right? But I just think that because that market had so much and then you get that game, that's what really kind of ends it, right?
Sure. I think to some degree, Sentinels of Multiverse did that for a superhero genre because it was so huge.
Yep.
And still so huge, right?
And you still see superhero games, but... There's
but not the way you did.
Right. Well, there's always the comparison then, right?
Exactly.
You know.
Right. You have this ubiquitous thing out there, right? This huge glowing icon that everyone is going to compare everything else to.
Right.
Yeah. Mm. And it's hard to compare.
Right.
It's hard to compare.
I think that's why, I mean, think of deck building games, right? The other deck building games that have been successful are very different than Dominion, right?
Sure.
Because if it's a Dominion clone, even if it's not quite, if it's close enough, then it's
and they end up.
And I know we're talking about mechanics, not themes now.
Sure, but those themes end up being speaking to a specific niche market, right?
Right.
Like Tanto Kyor is speaking to the people who are into really into Japanese games, right?
Or like DC deck building,
exactly.
So
into people who are into superhero DC stuff, right?
Right.
Right.
So it's basically saying, here's a mechanic you think is cool. We're going to put a theme on it that we think, you know, is really exciting because you care about this, right?
But they're never going to hit that market saturation, those big icons.
But again, remember the Dominion, right? Medieval theme. Straight medieval theme for the core game.
Yeah.
Which I think is one of the reasons why it had such good market saturation. Settlers of Catan, right? I'm building on an island.
Trading the Mediterranean.
Who doesn't understand that, right?
Right. Basic idea, right? So we're talking about themes that are big and broad and accessible to a huge mm-hmm. market, right? But I think there is room in themes for smaller stuff, right?
Absolutely.
This industry that we've put ourselves into that we're talking about is so big and so far reaching that there is space for independent stuff. We know that's true.
Yeah.
Kickstarter proves that. And there is space for smaller themes, more focused themes, when you pair them with the smaller, more focused games. I think I want to turn to some of the Twitter comments.
Let's do that. Yeah, let's do that.
And I think a lot of these people came at it from a different perspective than I did. And we got some good responses here. I'm going to start with, this is from Love Board Games on Twitter. It's @realm_master. And this is how you get a plug on our show. You give me a response to a question and you get me to look at your Twitter profile.
Uh-huh.
And it says, follow us for a free chance to win our new tabletop game sent to you with a personalized thanks. Kickstarter coming soon. That's Realm Master.
Right. See, so, look what you guys did.
But they
smart people.
Yeah. They said something you can completely immerse yourself in. So really immersive theme. That's what gets them excited about a theme.
That's
makes
good.
A good theme. And I can agree with that, especially if we're talking about a narrative focused game, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. Winner Circle Games had quite an extensive response here over several tweets. They say, and that's at Winner Circle. That's WYNNERS Circle. They say themes that are pasted on and have no real connection with the mechanics can ruin a game. I love games that seem to take the theme and build around it. Games that immerse you in the theme and the mechanics make sense and is seamless. Dead of Winter is one of my faves, and it does everything I want from a thematic game. So, again, talking about that immersion, that makes a really good theme for them.
Yep.
Something you can sink into and really own. Mr. Ben Pinchback says, now this is a different perspective that I think is interesting. He says, all themes are pasted on. That's what makes it a game. Designer's job is to build suspension of disbelief. Players willfully accept some amount of abstraction. The hard part is to not take them out of the moment.
He's smart.
He's a smart guy. So people always know that they're just pushing cardboard around and rolling dice, you know?
Right.
So the theme, he's saying that the theme is there to hopefully, you know.
I think what he's saying is the theme is always pasted on. The trick is to make it feel like it's not.
Sure. Yeah.
A great example of a game that I thought was really bad at that, and I apologize to whoever the designer is, Artifacts Inc.
Yeah, I agree.
It was that game where you're trying to like go on expeditions and find artifacts.
Yeah.
And I felt like I could have been doing anything. In fact, I felt like I was doing anything but finding artifacts.
Right.
I felt like I was just really bored. Did not like it even a little bit. But I felt like if it had a different theme that like actually made sense, mm-hmm. the game could have been really fun.
Could have been. That was more tightly integrated with what you're actually doing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Daniel Newman adds on to what Ben says. He says, that's what's great about board games. We imply theme to an abstraction, but it's up to the players to fill in the gaps with their imaginations.
Yeah.
And
that's true.
Yeah. That's a smart perspective on that. I think, inherently any theme that we apply to something, rolling dice and thinking about a story are two completely contrary experiences. And so our goal as designers is not only to make the rolling dice and playing cards into a series of meaningful decisions that are fun to make, but also to make those decisions connect in some way with that theme. And that's a lot harder than.
Well, what's interesting though, with Ben saying that is he basically is saying this maybe without meaning it, but when you say start with theme or start with mechanics, you're wrong, right? Because you're always starting with mechanics, because even if you're starting with theme, that theme, all that's doing is helping you find mechanics to justify that. So do you see what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you know, and it's true. You can have a game with the coolest theme ever. If the mechanics suck, mm-hmm. the game won't be fun.
Sure.
Hey, but I would argue
that's
with
the
you,
problem I have with Rocket Wreckers. I think that's a great theme still, but that mechanically was terrible.
But you could have the opposite of a game with brilliant mechanics and no theme mm-hmm. will still work. Now, a game with brilliant mechanics and a really, really bad theme, I would argue that depending on how bad you're willing to make the theme, you could make that game fail. But, you know, by making it incredibly terrible or, you know, obscene or something, to where just people wouldn't want to play
it. Sure, right.
But I think that the thing you run into is that mismatch, right? Where they don't talk. And that's because then it all feels like abstraction, right? And that's what it was with Artifacts Inc. It felt like I was trying to remember what the heck was going on, but I wasn't invested in what was happening.
Yeah. Like when I played that game, I felt like the designer made an interesting Euro and then found an artist that he liked and said, I want you to do a bunch of art in your style. And then I'm going to paste it onto these mechanics.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It felt a lot like that.
Yeah. The art's great. Oh, yeah, don't get me wrong. Good. Yeah. But yeah.
And, so yeah, I think that's why, you know, subconsciously you and I have both been so, like, we always are saying to each other, like, for instance, I was just working on Minecraft Madness again. I had a breakthrough idea on how to fundamentally change kind of the driving factor of that game.
More
to
on make that in a future episode.
Yeah, to make it more balanced. But the first thing I said was, like, I'm going to do this. And you said, how does that fit the theme?
Yeah.
And I responded and said, I think blah, 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 blah. And you were like, done. That's good
enough.
I buy it. Yeah, I buy it. That's all it takes. Mm-hmm. So that is what's important, right? Mm-hmm. That the theme...
Give us some connection.
Right.
Like we, as players, we want there to be a connection.
Right.
Make it easier for us to make that connection.
It's kind of like the uncanny valley, right? But the opposite. Like, you know, the uncanny valley with robots. If they look too human, there's a point where they can look human enough that you've passed it, but there's that point where they look just human enough
where it just creeps you out
because you can tell there's something wrong, but you don't know what it is.
Yeah.
It's like that with a game when the theme and mechanics don't fit right.
Mm-hmm.
Because first of all, you have a hard time remembering the mechanics and then you also have a hard time being immersed, right? For that immersion.
Yeah.
Whereas a good theme, even if it's quirky and silly, you can be immersed in that theme, right? You know, I mean, like when I'm playing Patchwork, right? Which as you said is kind of a silly theme, kind of boring, but I think it's silly and quirky and I like it. Like when there are holes in my quilt, that bothers me. Like I want to make the quilt solid.
Sure.
But other than getting the one bonus point thing, it really doesn't matter.
Mm.
Like what matters is having the least holes possible on the board, right? Mm. And sometimes that means leaving gaps. But you watch anyone play that and they don't. They do their best to not leave any gaps, even though honestly, it's okay if you do. Like because you just need to fill as many holes as possible because they're negative for each one you have. And it doesn't matter if they're in the middle of your quilt or on the edge, it's a negative either way. But that's where the theme is pulling you in saying, no, I need to have this fixed, right? Because this is what a quilt should look like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I have about that.
Okay.
Do you have any other tweets? Is that all?
No, that was all the response. I think some really good thoughts in that.
So the takeaways that we agreed with were immersion.
Yep.
The theme, if you want the theme to really pull you in, it's got to be immersive. Every theme, according to Ben, is just tacked on to the mechanics. And, you know, and as Daniel backed him up, the job is to make people forget that.
Yeah.
To make people believe it's not.
Sure. Right. And don't let the theme distract you from the mechanics.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And yeah. Make sure that they are not mismatched because when they are, your players will notice.
Yeah.
Even if they don't notice that they're noticing, they'll notice totally with things like not remembering mechanics and such.
Right.
So, and now... Rob is going to pitch a game.
Oh.
Called?
Autumn.
The theme given to him by yours truly. So, that was good. You said, hey, I want a theme to work on. And,
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you want to know how I did it?
Yeah.
I looked at my office window and I saw a highway and thought, traffic jam. That doesn't sound like fun. And then I looked around and I kept thinking of dumb stuff. Then I looked at the trees and the leaves changing color and I was like, oh, that's kind of mellow. And then I said, tree leaves changing color or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were like, oh, I like that.
Yeah.
And now we're here.
Right.
Now we're here.
So this is called Autumn. So this is hopefully a fairly serene, kind of calm game. This is a game played in 4 rounds. Okay. There are 108 cards in this game.
4 rounds, but 108 cards?
It might be too many. I'm honestly not sure.
I feel like you're bad with math, bro.
Well, it's not like there's everybody plays one card per round. I mean,
fair enough.
I should say four rounds of scoring.
Okay.
Four rounds of scoring. We'll put it that way. All right. So you have this deck of cards. Kind of conceptually here, we are, each of us is a tree Think of it that way. Each nice. Player is a tree, and you have a branch that is in front of you on the table, and you are going to be playing leaves, attaching leaves to the branch. They're going to grow there, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, and you're going to kind of help guide them through the color changes of autumn, until nice. We get to the end of season. All right. So we have, this is a 2-6 player game.
Cool. Okay.
Every player starts the game with two cards that are put end to end. Those are your branch. Okay. That's the main branch sure. that you're growing out there. And each branch has two sticks, growing out of it on either side that you can attach a leaf to, or a cluster of leaves, whatever. Okay. So everybody starts the game basically with four nodes, call it, onto which they can attach a leaf. Okay. Shuffle the rest of the cards. The thing about the cards is all the card backs are I think there are four different species of tree leaf on the card backs.
Okay.
In four different colors. Okay. And the colors are yellow, orange, red, and brown. The cycle of leaves changing color, generally speaking, right?
That's fair, yeah.
And you know, and if there's maple and oak and two other species of tree in that, there are, it's not like all the oak are yellow and all the maple are orange. You know, there's all four colors of all four types. Okay. So all the card backs have that information on them, on the backs. And on the fronts, the card fronts, are different actions that you can take. Okay. And I'll go through these actions here in a minute. So, again, you shuffle the deck. And at the start of the round, you deal everybody five cards, okay? So everybody, you can see your own card backs, and you can see everyone else's card backs. And we should all, assuming you shuffle properly, everybody should have a good mix of different colored leaves in their hands.
Right.
Okay, but you only know what your faces are, what the actions are on your card faces. Okay, all right. So, and you pick somebody to go first. And so for the first round, at the end of the first round, after everybody's played all the cards they're going to be able to play, you score 1 point for every yellow leaf attached to one of your branches. Okay. The end of the second round, you score 1 point for every orange. Third round, every red. Fourth round, every brown. And then there's a final round of scoring with some additional stuff after that.
Okay.
Okay. So it started the first round. Everybody's got five cards in their hand, and you're going to take turns playing one card. You're going to play one card on the table to a play pile, and take whatever that action is. Okay. And then you go around the table until everybody has played four of their five cards, and that ends the round.
Okay.
Okay.
But how are you getting leaves on trees?
That's, well, here's how we do it. This is with the actions that you play on those cards. Okay. So there are eight different actions that might be on these cards. So, one action is to play the current leaf color. So that means, if we are in the first round, that means you can play down a yellow leaf. Okay. And play down a yellow leaf. That means you can attach it to your branch. But you're going to play a card in order to attach a yellow leaf, but you're not going to take a yellow leaf from your hand. You're going to take a yellow leaf from someone else's hand and attach it to your branch.
I like that.
Okay. Now that doesn't mean that they're out of cards. They get to then draw another card into their hand.
Right.
Okay. But what you might've just done is taken an action that they wanted for some reason.
Right.
Okay. There's a card where you can add a leaf to your branch of any color. So there's one that says, one action is you play a card of the current round color. Another action is to play leaf of any color at all. It's kind of like a wild thing. Or then there's also cards that say you can only play a yellow leaf or a red leaf or an orange leaf or whatever. Okay. All right. So that's how you would add leaves. Okay. There are powers that allow you to advance a leaf color, so you can advance it from yellow to orange to red,
nice.
Red to brown.
Which would mean I can only do that if I've got yellow and I want orange. I can only do that if somebody has an orange showing.
Exactly right. Okay. Right. So I would advance it, and I could take an orange, and I don't remove the yellow. I put the orange on top of the yellow that's already there.
Oh, okay.
That's going to matter for that final round of scoring.
Ah, okay.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
You can roll back a leaf where if you have a brown on top of a red, I could pick that brown off. And actually what I would do is I would take that brown, I would tuck it underneath the pile.
Right.
Okay.
So you don't lose it.
But you roll it back to a different color. You can swap a leaf with another player's branch. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
There are some cards that allow you to grow your branch. So you can add another branch piece on. So now you can have six leaves out instead of four. Okay. And then there are also ones that allow you play one, you can draw a fresh card.
Okay.
Okay. So those are the different actions.
Is there a correlation between colors of leaves and the actions, or is it completely randomized?
So with the 108 cards, there's going to be 12 basic starting branch cards, and the rest of them break down so that there's 24 cards in each color, and then it's an even distribution of the different actions. Well, right now there's an even distribution of each action card within that 24 for each color.
Okay.
Okay. And that probably needs to be tweaked because I think some cards should be more common than others. Right now, for this basic idea I've put together, is that
the reason I was asking was, do I know that yellows are more likely to do X?
Oh, no. Okay. Should be even in terms of that.
I agree. I just was curious if you had thought about that, or if there was a reason to not do that.
Yeah, right. And now, when you're advancing cards or advancing colors, it doesn't matter which species of leaf you're going to get, right? It doesn't matter. That's fine because it's about color. But you play around. So everybody starts around five cards. You play until everybody's down to just one card left. That ends the round. You score all the cards for that color. Everybody draws back up to five. You play the next round and so on and so forth. So you get through all four rounds, all four colors. The final round of scoring, you get one extra point. So for every stack that you have, you get 1 point for every card in that stack above one. So if you have one card there, you're not going to get anything. But if you have three cards in that stack, you're going to get two extra points for that. Okay. And then also whatever leaf species is on top, you get plus 1 point for every leaf of the same species in that stack.
Okay. That's cool.
And that's your final scoring.
What happens to the card at the end of the round when you're down to one?
You keep that, save that to the next round.
Okay. Just curious.
That's how I have it right now. Maybe that makes sense.
Yeah. The only other thing I could think was if there was like a special slot at the end of your branch, mm-hmm. and that card you put there. So it's not an option, right? You just, that's the card that goes like at the tip, right?
That's not a bad idea, actually.
Because then people know what they're leaving you with. And for instance, if it's a red round, they probably want to make sure it's not red.
That's actually a pretty good idea.
Just a thought.
I would like to get more different actions into it. Mm-hmm. That's just kind of my first pass of concepts.
Right.
I would like to get some more actions in there. I don't want a lot of take that. Like, I don't want any more take that other than I'm taking a card from you, but that's not really hurting you because you're going to draw another one right away.
Right.
You know? And I'm okay with swapping leaves with somebody, but I don't want any other kind of penalty stuff.
And you had a leaf that you had a power that lets you rotate through the ones that you have there?
To advance forward and backward. And it'll be a lot easier to advance forward than it is to advance backwards. Okay. I think that the roll back ones would be a lot harder.
Right.
Yeah, there'd be far fewer of those actions in the deck.
Right.
Maybe half of the advance forward ones, or even less. But I would like there to be other actions in there, and I'm not sure what those might be just now.
Yeah.
But I imagine this again being kind of a serene, you know, just, hey, leaves, and we're working on colors, and it's not really a mean game, you know, and it's about, you know, you want to advance colors. In fact, you might keep working on one stack to make sure that you get a whole lot of bonus points.
Right.
You know, pushing one stack forward and back and forward and back and forward and back so that at the end you get that big stack. It gets you a whole lot of bonus points at the end.
Right. Yeah, I was trying to think of the one thing that, because this sounds like a lot of fun, actually, for a game that you did on a challenge. It sounds really, really good.
It was a pretty loose challenge.
I know, but still, I really like the idea of it. It'd be cool, and this might be too much. This could be a terrible idea, but it'd be almost neat if there was like a pile of leaves thematically, like in the middle or something.
I thought about that too. Yeah,
I don't know how you make it work. You might be able to play some powers off that.
Yeah.
But I do. I don't know. I mean, thematically, right?
Sure. Jump in the pile of leaves.
Right. Or even just the idea that like you could do something to manipulate the pile of leaves. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the discard pile.
The discard could turn into a leaf pile.
That's super thematic.
Right? It is, right? The leaves that fall off, are you got to rake them into a pile. I mean, thematically, I love that idea. I just don't know mechanically what to do with it.
That's something I would just ponder.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
Because like, I think that, but then again, you also don't want to overdo it. I mean, what you have here sounds like fun, simple and fun.
I think so.
You know?
Yeah.
And I love the idea of the theme. Like that, you know, that works really well.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, I mean, thank you for the theme idea.
I'm just, it's really cool what you did with it. So,
and then as I was thinking about that, and I, you know, autumn is kind of a generic title, but I feel like it fits. You know, because it also is kind of simple and direct and...
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. So there you go. Autumn.
I like it.
I think it's one of those things where we're taking a break for a month or so while we did other stuff. It's kind of helped freshen us up a little bit. It's been a healthy break.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, because you came up with your great Unreal Estate Dice concept, which sounds great to me.
And the changes to Minecraft Madness,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, right, right.
All in that time, because we took a break. Yeah, that helped. Right.
So, hey, there's another lesson to learn for the builders. Yeah. Maybe just now and then it's okay to take a break.
Yeah. Stop designing for a while. Do other stuff.
You don't have to force it. Yep. You don't always have to force it. Yeah. Sometimes you need to just buckle down and get to it.
But other times, completely disassociating yourself, not working on another design, just stop working on design. So, cool. All right.
So there you go, Autumn. That's my pitch.
I dig it.
I like the idea. I have some other stuff I need to work on here in November. Now that my moving is settled down, because we're recording this actually in the beginning of November. Got some other stuff I need to work on, but I think once that is settled, then Autumn, I'm kind of interested in.
Yes, I think you should proto it.
Cool. I don't have any other Twitter questions. Do you have anything to add to it? Any emails or the like?
I do not.
Okay, then we're done for tonight.
We are.
So thank you, everybody,
for listening.
Check that box. Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the show. We appreciate it. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can call our Google Voice number at 770-TEL-BTG. You can follow us on Twitter at podcastBTG. Jason is at JASlingerland. I am at poorly_designed. You can like us on Facebook, and please give us a 5-star review on iTunes and Stitcher and other podcast locations. And our website is buildingthegamepodcast.com. And join us again next week when we'll do something pretty much the same as this.
Pretty much.
Yeah. So, all right. We'll see you then.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
Okay. So, no, I don't want to update my freaking software, Apple. It's going to keep asking me that 17 times a day.
Yep. And they keep making it harder to say no to.
Until I get a new phone.